out of the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy, don't ask me to spell it, and probably most of us haven't read all that much in it. I've read it over the years, and it's one of those books like Leviticus and Numbers and that sometimes we get started reading it and we get caught up in all of the repetition and things that are going on in it, and we find ourselves not able to concentrate on it. But there's a lot of good information in the book of Deuteronomy, and I just want to read a few verses. My message this morning may be coming from a little different perspective, as we were at that birthday party yesterday. Brother G.W. Knight was there, and he and I were talking. He was preaching somewhere this evening, and he said he was going to preach on a subject that he'd never preached on before. And, you know, he's been preaching longer than I have, and what we find is that there's all kinds of subjects in here and all kinds of places to start. And even though we may have studied and preached a number of times, there's always something new that the Lord can use to bring out a point. And we trust that that's what he'll do this morning. This is going to be a little strange background reading, but bear with us as we read in the 23rd chapter of Deuteronomy, 23rd chapter, beginning at the 9th verse. While you're turning there, we're in the midst of Moses giving the people many of the social laws that they were to follow, many of the details of how that they were to live their life, the things that they were able to do, not to do, how they were to handle various circumstances. And so there's a lot of that in there. But beginning with the 9th verse, here's what Moses said by way of the Lord speaking to him. He says, "When the host," that is the people, the nation, the army, "goeth forth against thine enemy, then keep thee from every wicked thing. If there be among you any man that is not clean by reason of uncleanness that chanceth him by night, then shall he go abroad out of the camp. He shall not come within the camp. But he shall be, when evening cometh, he shall wash himself with water, and when the sun is down, he shall come into the camp again. Thou shalt have a place also without the camp, whither thou shalt go forth abroad. And thou shalt have a paddle upon thy weapon, and it shall be, when thou shalt ease thyself abroad, thou shalt dig therewith, and shalt turn back, and cover that which cometh from thee. For the Lord thy God walketh in the midst of thy camp, to deliver thee and to give up thine enemies before thee. Therefore shall thy camp be holy, that he see no unclean thing in thee and turn away from thee." The title of my lesson this morning, my message this morning, is God walketh in the midst of our camp. God walketh in the midst of our camp. And I think the first thing that comes to my mind as I read this a number of years ago and have had it in the back of my mind is what attention that God pays to detail and how important every little thing is. My real text comes from that 14th verse, where it says, "For the Lord thy God walketh in the midst of thy camp to deliver thee and to give up thine enemies before thee. Therefore," that "therefore" is really important. We'll get back to that in a little while. "Therefore shall thy camp be holy, that he see no unclean thing in thee and turn away from thee." And my mother used to say when I was growing up, and I've never forgotten it, that there is no shame in being poor, but it is an abomination to be dirty. It's an abomination to be filthy. And my mother always kept a clean house and tried to teach me the same thing we tried to teach our children, the same thing. But, you know, we've all heard the expression probably that cleanliness is next to godliness. But I want you to understand that according to what I just read, cleanliness is essential to godliness, and it applies to every aspect of our life. Now, I'll let you go home and go back and read that passage and sort out the details of what that's all talking about. But you need to understand, as you read through the law of Moses, sometimes when we think when we're talking about the law of Moses that we're just talking about the Ten Commandments. But the law of Moses that God gave Moses to give the people was all inclusive. It included the moral law, which was the Ten Commandments. This was the moral epitome of the way that we were to act and behave, and all of those things that are brought out in that. But if we read through the first five books of the Bible, we'll find that in addition to that moral law, there was the ceremonial law that was given, and that was the temple or the tabernacle. It was the priesthood. It was the sacrifices. All of that was ceremonial things that they went through in order for God to show them that they needed to be holy and they needed to be pure and they needed to be clean before they come into His presence. In very many occasions, and always before the priest could go offer a sacrifice, he was to cleanse himself. He was to take a bath. He was to wash himself. He was to put on clean clothes. He was to wash his hands. All of this, even in the ceremonial rituals, was instilling in them that God hates dirt. He hates dirt. Now, I'll get to my point in a minute. And dirt reaches to a lot of places. Sin is, in essence, filth. And dirt, something that's abominable to God. And all of these were pictures that God was putting upon them to continually remind them that He was holy and clean, and He expected them to be holy and clean. And so that law included the moral, it included the ceremonial things that they went through, and all, that underlined all of that was their cleanliness in their ceremonial rituals that they went through. But also the law of Moses, and particularly the book of Deuteronomy, it deals with the social aspect. So of laws of how we are to behave ourselves one with another, how that men are to relate to women, how that marriage is supposed to behave itself, how that we're to deal with economic situations in our community. This was all part of the law of Moses, because how we dealt with one another and how we were to behave ourselves. He even goes so far as to say that if you go on by down the road and you see a neighbor's animal, his cow or his ox, laying down, you have to stop and help it get to its feet. Because it's the right thing to do. And so God pays attention to all these details of how we're to interact one with another. And underlying all of that is our relationships one with another and in our community is to be one of cleanliness, one of clean actions, not something that's an abomination before God. And then finally, God even dealt with sanitary conditions, how that we are to be sanitary. He gave instructions as to the clean and the unclean kind of foods to eat. He gave instructions here how that we were to maintain sanitary conditions within the camp. And this particular passage that I was reading here, and we all know how important the sanitary conditions are. That's one of the things that separates America from many, many third world countries. Now, Sister Lisa said she was going to Cancun. Well, you're going down to a vacation resort or wherever it was. You're going down to a vacation resort. And I guarantee you, you'll find the same amenities there, cleanliness, that you find in America, because they're attracting in Americans. But if you go to a real third world country, you will find that it is not clean. That it is not like America. That the streets are dirty. That the people don't have the sanitary things that we have in America. And so God paid attention to those details, and we need to pay attention to those things as well. Now, this particular passage was written as they went out to war. And so what would happen as they went out to war is that the main camp the main city, if you will, for lack of a better term, that the main city would remain stationary, and the soldiers would move out into camps, just like an army does. And God was telling them that when you go out to war, when that you remove yourself from the main body of people, that you need to be reminded that you cannot let down on your cleanliness, let down on your behavior. What did he say in the ninth verse? When the host goeth forth against thine enemy, then keep thyself from every wicked thing. Soldiers sometimes tend to plunder. They tend to sometimes, when they're out on the battlefield, that they think that the rules that they had at home don't apply. That they can get by with things. And sometimes people tend to overlook them. Chris is shaking his head, yes. And I know that Brother Brian knows that thing too. Sometimes we'll hear of things that soldiers did. And it's not uncommon, and particularly I know during the Civil War, that one of the greatest problems that they had was venereal diseases that run rampant in the camps, because the camps of prostitution would follow them everywhere that they went. And God was reminding them that when you go out to war, it's no different than when you're back at home. I expect the same behavior out of you. I expect you to do right and to be clean at all times. And when it says in that 13th verse, and thou shalt have a paddle upon thy weapon, really what it means is that you shall have something in which that you can dig in the dirt and that you can have a latrine, if you will, out there, because it's important that the camp remain clean just as your dwelling places do. That's how important that these things were. Now, there's some instructive things that we can learn from this, and I bring this all up because we're reminded constantly, and should be, that we are the army of God. That's what we are. The Apostle Paul refers to us as soldiers. And we may be stationary in this house here at Sulphur Fork, but never forget that we are pilgrims and that we are, if you will, an army traveling through this life. And that we have an enemy to engage. And God wants to remind us that we are to remember that no matter where we are, whether we're at Sulphur Fork in our building or whether that we're out here on the field and maybe two or three together or whatever, that the same rules apply and God walks in our midst, that He's there among us. He's not a God that we left back home. He's not a God that closes His eyes to even the minor detail, but He's a God that sees everything. And you see, that was different than all of the other gods that that the barbarians and the heathens worship, because their god was a god of the mountain, or was a god of here, or a god of there. But Jehovah God traveled with them everywhere that they went. His presence was exemplified in the Shekinah glory, which dwelt in the tabernacle in the Holy of Holies. It was a representation. But He wanted them to know, don't think that because that I'm represented there among the people that I'm not with you wherever you go, and that I see everything that you do, and that it is I who gives you victory, and it is I who is with you. And if you want victory, then you must abstain from all things unclean. And so he goes into that. But now, let me get into the little bit of instructive thing, because I want you to realize, even though I read way back in the book of Deuteronomy, and they were the whole nation on the move, at this point they had not entered into the land of Canaan, but they were about to. Deuteronomy is the last book. Moses dies at the end of Deuteronomy. Joshua picks up and they begin their battle as they go in to take the land of Canaan. And he's reminded him here in Deuteronomy that when you're out and you go forth to war, that you are to keep yourself clean. And let's remember something that happened. You remember when they first went into the land and they went in and they took Jericho and the walls fell down? And what a great victory that they had, because God was with them and they prepared for it. But you remember that there was a man named Achan. And Achan was a soldier, and Achan got covetous, and God had told them not to take anything, but to destroy everything. And Achan got coveted, and he plundered. He took something God told him not to do. It was a little Babylonian garment and a little wedge of gold and some silver. And he took it and he hid it in his tent. And because of that, the next battle that they went to, which was just a little city of Ai, God was not with them and they were defeated and many men were killed. And so God had warned them, but they had not heeded the warning. He said, if you want me to be with you, remain clean. And so we're to be reminded of that. Now I want you to understand that even though we're reading back there about the nation of Israel and their warfare, they were God's people. They were God's people, and He was with them. And if we turn over into the New Testament, we'll find the exact same thought. We'll find the exact same thought. Turn with me, if you will, over to 2 Corinthians, and I want you to listen to what Paul told the church at Corinth. And it will apply exactly the same as what that God told them in the nation of Israel. Because, you see, it is the same people. Even though that we live under what we call the gospel age, it is the same people. We are God's people. We are God's Israel. We are the ones whose hearts have been changed, who have come under the covenant of God, and God walks and dwells with us just the same as He did with His people back before the Old Testament, in the Old Testament. In the sixth chapter of 2 Corinthians, pick up at the 15th verse and listen to what Paul said to the church. And what concord, in other words, what agreement, hath Christ with Baal, who is Satan? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? Now you think about that. Paul is addressing the church and he's telling them that you're different, that you're to remain separated from them. And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God hath said. And here's where Paul picks it up. He picks it up and goes back into the Old Testament and brings out a saying. And he says, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore? Therefore, that's the same. Wherefore, therefore is the same thing. For this reason, come out from among them that are unclean, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. That's exactly what he was saying back here. I expect cleanliness and holiness from you in the Old Testament. He expects the same thing from us, not to touch that unclean thing. And will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. Then listen to this next verse, first verse of the seventh chapter. Having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Exactly the same message that he was sending to the camp of Israelites, that we need to remain clean, we need to remain holy in spirit and in our flesh. You see, these bodies were important. These bodies house the Spirit of God. And He expects us to keep our bodies clean. He expects us to live and maintain cleanliness around us. And I'm not here saying that anybody doesn't, but I'm saying that that's how important that it is. When people look on a Christian, they ought to see one who's not only clean in spirit, but one who is clean in their actions and clean in their habitation as well. Because that's what God intended. It is the same people. We are the same people. We are God's people. And God expects those same things out of us. He says here in 2 Corinthians letter that we are to remain separated. Now, separated means that there is to be a line of demarcation. There is supposed to be a difference between us and the world. Amen. If you don't see a difference, something's wrong. Something's wrong, because this camp was God's people. They were different than the rest of their of the world, than the rest of their enemies. And folks, there always needs to be a line of demarcation between us and the rest of the world in all of our actions and all of those things that we do. I want to move on because there's other things I want to get to. Just as this camp was the army of God, we are the army of God. And what does an army do? An army is to always be on the defensive. We are to defend our borders. And that's what they were to do. They were to be defensive because. Why were they have to be defensive? Because they were in an enemy's country. They were traveling through their land. And folks, we are in an enemy's territory. This world belongs to Satan. This world belongs to the God of this world. And all of those who do not belong to God belong to this world. And we as an army are traveling through enemy territory. And we have got to be defensive at all times. That means we need to maintain that line of demarcation between us and the world. We cannot blend in with them. We can't put on the same uniform that they've got to wear that we can't be distinguished. See, that's why soldiers wear uniforms. Is so that the good guys on the one side can tell who their brethren are and they can identify who the enemy is. That's one of the reasons that the warfare that's going on today and this type of warfare over in Europe is the enemy is not identified and you can't tell who he is. But there needs to be a line of demarcation. You see, there was an incident that took place to the nation of Israel. And he refers to it a couple of chapters over. And that is that as they were traveling through the land toward Canaan, that they came across some land that was possessed and owned by some distant relatives, the Amalekites. They were the descendants of the grandson of Esau. Remember, Jacob and Esau? And Jacob was chosen by God to bring down the lineage to Jesus Christ, his son. And Esau was rejected simply because that Esau cared more about the and sold his birthright. And you all know the story. And so Esau went out and married one of the women in the land, had children, and his grandson, Edom, sometimes his descendants were referred to as the Edomites. And so 400 years later, as Israel is traveling through the land, they have to go through the territory that's owned by Edom, and their king was known as Amalek. That was a title. So they were called the Amalekites, but they were descendants of Edom, the grandson of Esau. And as they traveled through that land, they wanted to go through and pass straight through, and they wouldn't let them. And Moses even offered to pay them greatly to pass through their land, but they would not let them go through. And God said, don't raise your sword against them because they are your kindred. And so they had to encompass the land and go way out of their way to get around. But while they were doing that, the Amalekites attacked them from the rear. And they would pick off those that were vulnerable in the rear. And they kept attacking them from the rear. And you remember the story how that when Joshua and Caleb went to battle, Joshua went to battle and Moses was up there, and as long as they held his hands up, that the Israelites prevailed. Well, that was against the Amalekites. And so we have to understand that they had to keep a defensive line and they had to separate themselves and identify who the enemy was. And just as that army had to protect its borders, and that was the problem, they were being attacked. But an army puts out sentries. What do sentries do? Sentries are to keep their eyes open to make sure that the enemy doesn't slip in and attack from the rear or get inside the camp. Folks, that's why that we try to keep our eyes out to realize that our enemy, Satan, tries to slip his soldiers in among us because they can do a lot of damage in among God's people. They can ransack the camp. They can cause disturbances. They can lull away the weak. And so it's our responsibility as a church, as an army, to look and to be certain of those who are coming within our borders. That's why that we ask for a testimony. Those who identify themselves so that we might see, not only in their words, but in their actions, that they wear the uniform, the righteousness of Jesus Christ, so that they might be among us. And so, in that regard, we are to be on the defensive. But we're also to be on the offensive, just as an army does. We're supposed to go. That's what Jesus said to his young army there in the 28th chapter of Matthew. He said, I go back. But he said, all power in heaven and earth is given unto me. Go. Go into the world. And so, just as this army was to go in and take the land that God had promised them, and they needed to keep themselves clean, they needed to keep themselves with God's presence so that they could have victory, we have been sent to go into the world, and the world is the enemy's territory, and to go into the world and preach the gospel, and we will not be successful unless God is with us. Unless God is with us to give us the victory. And so the importance of us as soldiers, as Christians within this army, to keep ourselves clean and separated from the world in all things. Now, these people enjoyed a very special privilege. And one of the privileges that they enjoyed, and it tells us in that first half of that 14th verse that I took as a text, it says, for the Lord thy God walketh in the midst of thy camp to deliver thee and to give up thine enemies before thee. And so God is present with us in order that he might deliver us from the enemy, that he might give us victory. That's a special privilege that we have, that they had, and that we have, is that God walks with us. It's a special relationship. It's a special relationship because God loves his people. He loves them enough that he doesn't stay away. He doesn't command from a distance, but he walks in the camp. He is with us wherever that we go, but because he loves us, and he will not leave us to chance. And so that's something for us to be very thankful for, that God loves us and he walks among us. And also notice that he watchfully observes everything that's going on. He said, keep yourself clean. Keep yourself clean so that I won't withdraw myself. Because God can't stand uncleanness. Now, you can relate that to physical things, but it certainly applies to spiritual things and moral things. Those things that we're involved in, if we want to be successful, if we want to have a true revival and to see the enemy destroyed and souls liberated and made free unto salvation, it is imperative that we are clean, that there is no hidden sin in our life, as Achan hid sin under his in his camp, in his tent. It's imperative that our actions correspond with our identity as Christians, that we behave ourselves correctly, because God is looking. He's watching everything that goes on inside of this church. He's watching everything that goes on inside your camp at home as well. And don't think that because that you're outside of the main church that you're free from God walking among you. That's what he was telling them. That even when you're removed from the main body, I am there. I see everything that's going on. I care about everything down to the smallest detail. And so he walks in your home. He's there with you when that you have conversation, when you have visitors who come in, when you're instructing your children, or everything that you're involved in, God is there. And he says, if you want to have success in your battles, whether it be with your children as you try to train them to grow up in the nurture and admonition of God, or whether it's to get along with your neighbor who is who, remember, if he's not of God, if he's not a Christian, then he is an enemy. And you're no matter he may be labeled as a good person, but if he's not one of God's, he doesn't have the same thing you have, and there's a lot of demarcation. But if you want to get along with him and you want him to respect you as a Christian, it's important for you to live your life that way, that he might see something different about you. And all of this, and all of these special privileges that we have, is so that God might deliver us and give us victory in every aspect of our life, but certainly victory in preaching to the lost, that the lost might be saved and that the kingdom might grow. Now, there's something else that goes, that we have to take that first part of the verse and we have to understand that there's a therefore in there. And that's why I said that's so important. God says, this is what I did. I will walk with you. I will be with you. I will give you victory. I will defeat your enemies. And because I will do this, therefore, he says, shall thy camp be holy. Holy means clean, means acceptable to God. In everything, your camp at home, our camp here at Sulphur Fork, as we meet, therefore, thy camp shall be holy, that he see no unclean thing in thee, and turn away from thee. And so, our camp publicly has to be clean. When people come in, our attention needs to be toward the Lord, that we need to regard Him, to exalt Him, to remember that we're under His watchful eye. And so, publicly and privately, our camp needs to be clean at home. And God, you may hide it from the preacher. You know, we were trying to sell our house, and when people come in, we got a call last week on Friday evening about 4 o'clock that there was people coming the next day at noon to look at our house. And you know what we had to do? Very little. Very little. We just brushed up a few things, and that's the way we live. We live with our house in order. And people can walk in any time and look at it. There was a man that came a few weeks ago. It was on a Saturday. Cindy was changing the bed out. And I was outside working. And he saw the sign. And he drove down the driveway to see the house. And while he was there, he said, would you mind if I look inside? And I said, you're welcome to come in. Because the house was in order. And so it ought to be with our church. It should always be in order. And so it should be with our lives. It should always be in order. So that we don't have to quickly run and try to put away the dirt and the filth so that nobody will see it. And so that's what God expects of us. Each Christian. Every Christian should be clean in all things. In his person. It's important for us to keep these temples clean. Because we are, and Christ dwells in us if we've been saved, and when the rest of the world is looking on us, if we don't wash ourselves up and clean ourselves and look presentable to the rest of the world, why would they want the Christ that we say that lives in us if we're not even presentable? And so it's important for us to have good hygiene, to be clean before the world. What is one of the first things that we began to teach our children? Is we teach them how to wash themselves, how to wash their hair, how to take care of themselves, their hygiene. All that is important, and it was important enough to God that He put it in His laws that His people might understand how important it was. And so every Christian should be clean in his person, in his house, in where you dwell. And I'm not talking about whether or not you swept some dirt under the rug when you were sweeping the floor. I'm talking about the way that you conduct your house, your language, the things that that go on in your house, the relationship between the husband and the wife, between the parents and the children. All those should be in order and be clean. And your garments and the things that you wear, and in our habits, the things that we do, the habits that we have. All of those things are indicative of the attitude that we have toward our God, because He dwelleth in us and dwelleth with us, and He sees everything that is going on. And then He leaves the warning. He leaves the warning. Least, what does He say? That He see no unclean thing in thee and turn away from thee. That's the warning. If we don't keep ourselves clean, if we don't keep our moral life as it should be, if we don't keep a line of separation between us and the world, we can put name revival on all the meetings that we have and it won't make a bit of difference. Because if He's not with us and He's not fighting the battle, we will not see success. We will not see Bella saved. We will not see Chris and Logan come to an understanding of which side of this equation that they're on, whether they're saved or lost. We won't see our children that are growing up and come to the age of accountability. We won't see them saved, because the power of salvation lies with God, and God will not walk with us unless that we are in order, unless that there be no unclean thing among us. If you've got one with another, a church has no power. as long as there's dissension within the church. If there's things that need to be settled, they need to be settled before we can even think about having a revival. And so preparation for revival means getting ourselves clean and in order so that when God, when we go out to battle, and that's what we've done, we've set that week of revival as a battle, as a time in which that we've invited in a helper that we intend to do battle, that the lost might be saved, but we need to be revived. And in order for that to happen and for God to fight the battles for us, He needs to see a clean heart in us. King David said, "O Lord, search me and try me to see if there be any wicked way in me." Are we prepared to say, "Lord, look in my heart and see if there's anything that is unclean that needs to be fixed and made right so that you can walk with us"? Not one of us, I'm sure, wants to be the Achan that causes the army to be defeated when we go into a battle. But it's important for each of us to be clean in this thing. And so, our success depends on His presence, and His presence depends upon our holiness, on our cleanness before Him, spiritually, particularly, and morally, and in the things that He has told us that are essential to a lasting relationship and fellowship with Him. And I'm going to close with one last thing, and I am going to close with one last thing. I want the lost that are here to know that this message is not just for the saved, and it's so important that you realize that the reason that this camp needs to be kept clean and to be kept as a refuge for those who would flee from the enemy tells us in the next two verses. I stop with the 14th verse. Listen to the 15th and 16th verses. "Thou shalt not deliver unto his master the servant which is escaped from his master unto thee. He shall dwell with thee, even among you, in that place which he shall choose, in one of thy gates, where it liketh him best. Thou shalt not oppress him." So after he said all of these things about the camp, he says, "And if one of your enemy flee to you to escape his master, then you welcome him with open arms, and you not oppress him, but you let him be and dwell among you." And that's what revival is all about. That's what our plea to the lost is, you see. They are servants. They are slaves to the master of this world, who owns this world. They belong to him. And if they flee from him because of his oppression upon them, because of the sin and iniquity and the filth in their own lives, and they flee to this city for refuge, we are not to return them to their master, but we are to make them welcome and to provide them a place of habitation that they too might enjoy the blessings of God. So you see, there's a message in this for the lost as well, and it becomes even more imperative for us as a church to remain clean in our behavior, in our relationship, in our fellowship with God, and that the lost, when they become filled up with the oppression of their master, Satan, that they flee for refuge, that we are to receive them and provide that place for them. You see, God is always looking out. He's always looking out for the one who wants to leave his sins and to leave his uncleanness and to come in and be clean before him. Now, what's the first thing that he does? Well, it's the first thing that God does. And you'll find it even in here, as they ceremonially received in a stranger, they were to wash them and circumcise them and to make them one of them. And so it is, as they come in to the Lord's people, the first thing the Lord does is save their soul and to wash them and cleanse them with the blood of Christ internally, to make them clean before Him. And once they're clean, He says to them, "Come on in to the camp. Come on in to my people, and I will dwell among you. I will walk among you, and I will be a father to you." That's the kind of God we serve. It ought to make every one of us tremble to realize that God is looking that closely in our lives to everything that we do. Brother Jake, if you've got a song, I hope you'll think about this. I know it was probably a strange way to come at a message, but God wants us to know every detail is important. He is involved in everything. He expects us to be holy. He said, I am holy, therefore be ye holy. And that word holy in many places is translated clean. Be clean in all that you are and all that you do. Go ahead, Brother Jake.
In the other book, under 256.